This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Linda Kenyon. At least three people have been killed after a series of tornadoes tore through the central part of the country. David Roth is a meteorologist at the Weather Prediction Center.
There were 26 reports individually of tornadoes, and they did a variety of surveys, and it looks like they've confirmed at least 12, and seven of them in southwest Ohio.
The tornadoes also left trails of destruction in Kentucky, Indiana, and Arkansas. Fulton County District Attorney Fonnie Willis is staying. Special Prosecutor Nathan Wade is going in the Georgia election interference case against former President Trump. This after a judge ruled one of them had to go due to their romantic relationship. CBS's Bradley Blackburn has the story.
On social media, former President Trump celebrated the decision, calling Wade a disgrace. In a letter to Willis, Wade wrote he was resigning in the interest of democracy and to move this case forward as quickly as possible. But an attorney who represented Kenneth Chesbrough, who pleaded guilty last year in the Georgia case, says the legal wrangling has set back the start of a potential trial.
It is the first delivery of humanitarian aid to Gaza by way of a sea corridor.
The first maritime aid shipment reached Gaza on Friday. Juan Camilo from the World Central Kitchen, which runs the operation.
Beans, canned meat, we have flour, rice, and of course we have dates.
Meanwhile, the Israeli army continued its attacks in Gaza, saying it killed 25 terrorists in southern and central Gaza in the past 24 hours. Prime Minister Netanyahu approved a military operation in the southern city of Rafah, with Palestinian civilians expected to be evacuated in the near future. Yotam Confino for CBS News in Tel Aviv.
Protest vandalism is going on at some polling places in Russia's election. Russian leader Vladimir Putin is expected to win another six-year term in office. The BBC's Steve Rosenberg reports from a polling place in Moscow.
Chaotic scenes here.
What is it?
An arsonist is detained and green ink poured into a ballot box.
The widow of opposition leader Alexei Navalny is urging his followers to simply show up at the polling places, not to do anything, just to be there, to be together, and to show the Kremlin there is still opposition in Russia to Putin's rule. No word yet if anyone has claimed the Mega Millions jackpot.
Our first winning number tonight is 50. That's followed by 13. Up next, we have 66. Your next number is 51. And your final white ball number for this Friday evening is 25.
Now, if there's no winner, the jackpot would rise to an estimated $815 million. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. A new report says Black LGBTQ+ youth are seeing more equality, but it doesn't always mean greater opportunity. Edwin J. Vieira explains.
The Human Rights Campaign reports around 82% of kids were out to someone in their immediate family. This shows a growing comfort level they have in being who they are, but the findings also indicate this doesn't always translate into acceptance and leads to concern. Ryan J. Watson, a University of Connecticut professor and researcher for the report, says a key takeaway is how Black LGBTQ+ youth face exclusion on several fronts.
Maybe their Black African-American relatives, friends, are in particularly unsupportive of them being a sexual gender minority, and so they kind of have stigma from that side. And then also the kids in this report are reporting they feel excluded by white LGBTQ youth and populations.
The report suggests parents can educate themselves about sexuality and gender identity, as well as use the name and pronouns their kids use to define themselves. The report also finds mental health is a big concern for this population. Around 59% of Black LGBTQ+ youth screened positive for depression, while close to 40% of those surveyed were diagnosed with anxiety. Watson finds these figures alarming.
We could leverage health professionals, teachers, parents, but if I were developing an intervention right now to help a particular group of youth, this to me seems like a population in dire need.
Nearly half of all Black transgender or gender expansive youth have unmet mental health needs. Surveys find accessing mental health care is a challenge for many Black or minority residents. Along with this, many are concerned about how their gender identity will affect their futures. More than 80% say they want to attend college, but almost one-third worry how being LGBTQ+ could harm their future higher education opportunities. This is Edwin J. Vieira. Support for this reporting is provided by Lumina Foundation.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
Tune in Monday for the Devil's Advocate. Dom's going to tell you Joe Biden's old. I'm going to tell you no, he's not. He's just right. Monday, 4 to 6 across the Civic Media Network. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, partly sunny with highs in the mid-50s. It'll be breezy out of the west, up to 30 miles per hour at times. For tonight, partly cloudy, breezy, 28. More clouds for Sunday. We'll see a high near 37. Monday, partly sunny. Again, highs around 37.
It's 39 at our studios.
Whether you're heading down Les Paul Parkway or fighting traffic on the interstates, this is The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK. Traffic on the interstates. This is The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK. Traffic on
St. Patrick's Day Eve 2024. It was 8 o'clock on Saturday morning. It's still time for This Week in Waukesha. I'm your host, Don Brown. I'm joined by Johnny on the board and on the jukebox, where he'll be singing about a thing called love later. And we're coming to you live and local from the office of former Alderman Don Paul Brown here in the WAUK studios, right around the corner from Theodore Yeoman's Park, where we are proud to honor our suffragette heritage here in the Shaw. And before we take Susie's call, question for you. And last week's guest, your opponents, didn't get this right either. So don't be. Can you tell me who Theodora Yeomans was?
Yes. She was the lady who actually lived where Les Paul Middle School is now.
Really?
Right?
Okay. I didn't know that part. Yeah.
Yep. So I don't know her whole life story, actually. Are you going to tell us?
She was the president of the women's suffrage movement, a Carroll graduate, a reporter for the Freeman, and she and she's one of the big reasons why Wisconsin, and I don't know if you know this, Professor Kaufman, Wisconsin was the first state to ratify the 19th Amendment. And I only learned that because when I was on the city council, Mayor Riley did a proclamation on September, I think 19th was the anniversary in 2019. So I'd like to give her a big shout out. And, you know, there's just so much great local history, too. I want to celebrate it. And my guest a couple weeks ago is John Shane Connect, a middle school art teacher from Butler Middle School, who became our unofficial historian of Waukesha history. We're probably the foremost expert on the Springs era. But if you get a chance, check out my podcast page on WAUK Radio for This Week in Waukesha. And it's really worth listening to. It's just so many great nuggets of Waukesha history, which led to more. So we're going to have John on again. From that conversation, I didn't realize. So we knew the first forward pass took place in Waukesha in college at Carroll University. But also, the guy that invented the individual yard line markers came from Waukesha. Hartle Field was the first field, high school, college, or pro to have the individual yard lines. And Wisconsin was the first college team. And then this guy, whoever invented it, sold that to the NFL and to the college ranks. And I only knew that because John, after the show, had sent over a couple articles on we were trying to find out the origins of the Waukesha South Blackshirt nickname. So, but anyway, my guests again are Anthony Zenobia and Kelly Piazek, incumbent candidates, Waukesha School Board. And Susie, you've been so patient. Thank you. What's your question?
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for having me on the show and thank you for taking my call. I'm going to start again. There's so much positive activity and great news coming out of Waukesha schools. I would like to thank you for all you have done and will continue to do when reelected. My question is, the advancement of the trades is very important to me. What are some of the things that Waukesha schools are doing to build the trades education program?
Great question. Thank you. Who would like to go first?
I can start with that. I, you know, part of when I originally ran, I think it's probably still something that really needs to be taken into a second term or taken forward by the board is to extend the visibility of a lot of the programs that we already have within the district that steer kids towards the trades. We have the Engineering Academy and the Health Professionals Academy at South. We're getting more involved with our STEM programs with local manufacturers in what's called the MADE program. And I think it's really important to begin to transition some of the student population who does not want to go directly into college, into a four-year college, to have them go toward the jobs that are available, that are well-paying, that give them a career path and a path back to higher education as they learn. There's so many high-paying jobs. In my profession, I hear every time I walk into a shop or a plant that, hey, we could use a welder, we could use a fabricator. In every part of the industry, they need people. They want to teach people what they're doing. They have apprenticeships. They want to get kids engaged. These are extremely well-paying jobs all over Waukesha, all over Wisconsin. So that's very important. I think we need to make those programs more visible. We need to recruit more kids into thinking that that's an option for them to go into. And there's already a great foundation in Waukesha to do that. So it's a great springboard.
Terrific. How about you, Kelly?
I'll add a couple quick things. We have these district-level key performance indicators that we put in place a couple years ago because we really wanted metrics that would drive the right behaviors. And one of those was involvement in the career and technical education path and dual enrollment. So we've seen a tremendous growth in our dual credit enrollment, in our certifications and industry-recognized credentials that students can actually earn through co-listing courses with high school and with college and technical colleges. We have the largest investment with WCTC for our high school students. We're paying for courses at UW, and a lot of that is designed to contribute to certificates. So I think to what Anthony said, we have incredible opportunities for kids in manufacturing and automotive and healthcare. The challenge and the opportunity, I think, is just to make sure that we communicate that. And that gets back to what I was saying about middle school earlier, too. We can't start too early. Kids start making decisions about what electives they want to take and where they want to be down the road. They make those decisions in seventh and eighth grade. So we need to get that message to them as soon as possible, help them understand what paths are available. I mean, how great to be able to get a technical degree or a professional certification and be able to work your way through that next level, whatever it is that you're going to do next. So if I could just share real quick, too, last week, Thursday, I was able to go to Waukesha South. There was a lunch on embedded agriculture. And so I think another thing the district does really well is to integrate different concepts across the curriculum. So the chef foods and the cooking classes were working together with the hydroponics and all the embedded agriculture. And so it was cool. Just really cool to see, you know, them put a menu together and do a lot of organic related meal preparation. So that's just a great example of how all those pieces can really be integrated to curriculum and prepare kids for what's next.
Sounds great. And my co-host, Professor Robert Kaufman, what are your thoughts on the vocations, the trades, and how we can do it?
Yeah, we need much more of that. And these are good paying jobs. We need electricians. One of the problems of student debt forgiveness is it's neglected the tradespeople. My daughter's significant other, wonderful guy, is an electrician, and he said, "Hey Bob, I could have used some help for my 150 truck for my business, rather than taking some esoteric subject at a university where the kids were advised based on malpractice." And they came out of school unemployable. So bravo to anything that emphasizes vocational education. We need what COVID illustrated is the world could live very well without the diversity deans. There are more of them on my campus than ayatollahs in Tehran. What you can't live without, you can't live without plumbers, right, tradesmen, electrician, the people who deliver your food, the people at the grocery store that stock your food. We've really neglected what Victor Davis Hanson calls muscular labor, and anything that redresses that neglect is all to the good.
Sounds good. Thanks, Bob. Next question. How is the district preparing for the implementation of Wisconsin Act 20? And for your benefit, Dr. Kaufman, it's an early literacy education law that by January of 2025, all schools are required to teach phonics and other best practices to ensure that kids can read by third grade. Who would like to go first?
I would love to go first.
Kelly.
We're in a really good place on Act 20. Something just to give some historical perspective, we implemented a new phonics program a couple years ago. We've implemented a really incredible new writing program last year. And these are all part of these investments that we're making in evidence-based curriculum. On the basis of the science of reading. So Act 20 it's unfortunate that it's necessary, right? We have so much variety in how kids are learning how to read. And a lot of it is based on this concept called three cueing, where you're really trying to understand the context of the word and not actually learn how to read the word. Yeah. So it was time to be really clear about the fact that that's not effective. And in my work, I spend a lot of time trying to understand how the brain works and how humans respond to different things. And so it's pretty clear that a science-based approach that's advocated for in Act 20 makes sense. So on a positive note, we already have a lot of the building blocks in place. We were working toward implementing that comprehensive literacy program. And so we're on track. We're in a really good place. I think like anything else, when you have, whether it be state or federal level government saying, you know, thou shalt do this, and we're going to tell you that you have to do it. And then we might tell you how to do it. We might not. And we might change, sure, you know, the decisions made at the state level are just taking too long. And what I think a lot of districts are doing is they're kind of waiting for those decisions so they know how to pay for these things. We don't have that challenge necessarily because we have some of the pieces in place already. We're going to do what makes sense. We're going to continue with that science of reading strategy that we've had. But there are some things that are just, you know, there's bureaucracy at the state level between the legislators and the DPI, and they just need to stop fighting about all of this and let us implement it so that we can get our kids to reading again.
Sounds great. We're going to give Anthony Zenobi a chance to talk about Act 20. But want to remind everybody, next Saturday, March 23rd, at Carroll University Stackner Ballroom from 10 to 12, the Chi Omega sorority is co-sponsoring the Waffles for Wishes to benefit Make-A-Wish Foundation. Again, in addition to breakfast, there will be raffles and silent auctions, and the proceeds will help a 13-year-old boy named Mason make his wish come true, which is meeting YouTuber Mystic7. So much more to talk about here with my incumbent candidates, Kelly Piazek and Anthony Zenobia, and my co-host moderator, Professor Robert Kaufman of Pepperdine, as This Week in Waukesha continues. Clean out your books from the shelf. Well, this song's inspired by a good man and his Jew. Doing good for others, sing Amazing Grace to you, yeah. It doesn't really matter if you're all German love inside, as long as you know that love is endless and the world is wide.
The Shaw, WAUK.
Most of us can agree we should have the freedom to make our own medical decisions. Politicians should have no role at all, but not California mega millionaire Eric Hovde. Hovde said, I am totally opposed to abortion, and I'm 100% pro-life. And he supported overturning Roe v. Wade, the court case that protected abortion rights. Hovde's been supported by Wisconsin Right to Life, an extreme anti-abortion group that supports banning abortion, even in cases of rape and incest, and threatens doctors and nurses with criminal charges for providing abortion care. With views like that, Hovde could be a crucial vote in favor of a national abortion ban, letting politicians decide what's right for women. Call Eric Hovde at his California office at 714-730-4444. Tell him his position on abortion is dangerous for Wisconsin women. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together, Inc.
You're listening to The Shaw, W-A-U-K, Waukesha's home for Matt and Air on Air.
Together, Inc.
You're listening to The Shaw, W-A-U-K, Waukesha's home for Matt and Air on Air.
Together.
For me, I was once their age, once I was young, but I know I had my family to fall back on. Get it up. Share it.
And the Civic Media app. And we are taking your calls, 414-441-2941. But I want to give Anthony Zanobi a chance to talk about the plan for Act 20, I believe that is. But also, I want to lead into the next question. I want to thank Anthony for reminding me. It is National Reading Month. And so you can. So this will be two parts for you, and then we'll have Kelly. So after you answer Act 20, I want to hear about what you're reading now, but also what favorite book you had in your youth that inspired you.
Okay.
So go ahead. Act 20 first.
Yeah. Act 20. What I think I'm really proud about is that we're a little bit ahead of the curve on Act 20. So a lot of what Kelly said, yeah, I don't want to rehash that, but the district had already moved back toward phonics. I think it was in 2021. My son attended Rose Glen his kindergarten and first grade year and was not available then. So that was a change that was already occurring. But as we began to integrate all these new curriculums, we're already ahead of that curve in getting reading and literacy back into the elementary level. Another thing that we did and we pushed for on the board was when the COVID money came out, they only required that you spend 20% of that money on education, okay, recovery, getting kids back into the classroom, catching them up. We pushed to get more, and we were nearly 40% of that money we spent on curriculum. So we're well ahead of that. We have great people working on how to implement Act 20. We just had that in front of the Teaching and Learning Committee. So, Eric Brooks would be a great resource to talk to if he's able.
Eric is the other candidate, the fifth candidate for the school board, and we've extended an invitation through his campaign website for us to join me on next week's show along with Dr. Daytona.
That's Kribo. Right.
So
he's got to
join us.
Yeah, he's got a lot of great insight into that particular. As far as the question was on reading and kind of what inspired me, I think as a kid I remember reading a lot of C.S. Lewis. That was obviously a lot of great books that he wrote. I just bought my daughter the Laura Ingalls Wilder series. She's 10, and she's getting really interested in reading, but
I probably have it at home. I could have given it to you.
Oh, well, I didn't. Yeah, it wasn't that expensive. But a lot of great insight into Wisconsin back in the day.
Mrs. Engels was from Brookfield.
That's right. Yeah. So very, very interesting. But what kind of inspired me to want to learn and read was just what was going on in the country at the time. At the end of the Reagan administration, this contrast between America and the Soviet Union, what made us unique? Why was there such a contrast? And I wanted to understand why America was doing things right. And it's kind of counterintuitive. It got me to read books in economics. Economics in One Lesson was a great book in high school that just simplified a lot of that stuff.
And I want to interject too. I'm glad you mentioned the Reagan era in the Cold Wars. I gave a public comment at City Council. It's probably my first return since leaving. And it was about Hillcrest Park, where there was an initial commitment to, for your benefit, Bob Kaufman, Hillcrest was, there was a Nike missile base there. And there has been an effort by our Parks Department to save a lot of that metal and make a pavilion for special events, concerts, parties, weddings, as well as an outdoor Cold War museum experience. And it seems like that's been put on hold. And granted, there was COVID, there was a little project involving bringing Lake Michigan water. And, but I'd really love to see that project finished because it's modeled after other Nike missile bases in Chicago that have been very successful and could be a major attraction. But the point I'm getting back to, but my school board incumbent candidates, is that I don't think there's enough Cold War history being taught or helping people remember that. Professor Kaufman, I know you want to weigh in on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm actually a Cold War historian, and I'm on the advisory board of the Reagan Library, and I was the historical consultant for the Air Force One project at the library, which has been the most popular national exhibit at presidential libraries. And one of the reasons they did it, and one of the reasons they did it the way they did it, is no one really understands what the Cold War was about and how it ended, and that it wasn't just a misunderstanding. We won it because we fought it. And I also suggested, and they agreed, that there was a special room, a tribute to the victims of communism. According to the Black Book of Communism, this is in Fox News, this is Harvard University Press, two Frenchmen edited it. Communism's responsible for murdering 100 million people in the 20th century. Mm-hmm. So when we won the Cold War, and we won it without having to fight a kinetic war, for all our mistakes, that is an extraordinary accomplishment that we can't take for granted as we face increasingly perilous times right now. This is why we study history, to see how to evaluate leaders and to make sure we have the wisdom of the past to deal with the problems of the present and the future. And we've been derelict about that.
Yeah, and I want to mention, and we're going to give Kelly a chance to talk about what she enjoyed reading. But really quick was, when I in middle school, I read a lot of books about the threat of nuclear devastation in the classroom, short stories, as well as about the threat of like Orwellian, like authoritarian regimes. And I remember being very deeply depressed at such a young age to learn that nuclear devastation was possible. And, you know, I bring this up because I know there's been a lot of arguments about what books should be accepted or not. And I think, like, that one had a huge impact on me negatively, and it scared me. But it also, I grew from it. I learned a lot. And so, yeah. But anyway, Kelly, tell us about what you're reading now and what you enjoyed reading and what inspired you as a youth.
I'd love to. I also just want to say that our juniors right now in history are right in the moment talking about the Cold War. So that's ongoing, and I think we're pretty comprehensive in that, especially for our high school students. So that's positive. So I was a Nancy Drew Hardy Boys girl. Like, you know,
I was a Hardy Boys guy.
Love me a good mystery, and I think it really, really made me, you know, curious and always kind of trying to figure things out. But lately, you know, unfortunately, I read a lot of K-12 textbooks because that's just part of the job.
Sure,
and we've put a lot in place lately. And I think it's really important that we read them. We don't just rubber stamp them. So I spend a lot of time doing that. And I read a lot of scientific papers because that's just the nature of my work. But I really kind of Anthony said earlier, I've really become intellectually obsessed with the Inklings and the relationship between Tolkien and C.S. Lewis. And so I've actually gone back to reading The Hobbit. You know, I read that when I was in high school.
Sure.
But it didn't mean the same thing as it does now, right? Mm. And so you can really kind of appreciate the, you know, these underlying messages of just courage and doing something different and, you know, being, you know, coming out of your shell and being uncomfortable. And so I've just I just really appreciate the relationship that some of these writers
Sounds
have.
Great. The discussion continues with Dr. Kelly Piazzik and Anthony Zenobia, incoming candidates for school board, as well as our guest professor, Robert Kaufman, as this Week in Waukesha continues on WAUK 540 AM 101.1 FM.
Broadcasting to Waukesha at 101.1 FM. Broadcasting to Southeast Wisconsin at 540 AM. This is The Shaw, WAUK.
CBS News Brief. Rain and severe thunderstorms will hit Texas today. Here's meteorologist David Roth.
We do have a heavy rain risk across south central Texas, southeast Texas, and far southwest Louisiana is where the biggest risk of excessive rainfall is.
The special prosecutor in the Georgia election interference case against former President Trump has resigned following a romantic relationship with the district attorney. As for a speedy trial,
it now looks like not a single trial will be completed by the time people vote for president. They won't know whether Trump is found guilty or not.
Politics professor Larry Sabato. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has approved the military's plan for an operation in the Gaza city of Rafah.
Get civilians out of harm's way, but also to make sure that once out of harm's way, they're appropriately cared for with shelter, with food, with medicine, with clothing, and we've not yet seen such a plan.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken. CBS News Brief. I'm Linda Kenyon.
Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Wisconsin Badgers playing the number one seed in the Big Ten tournament today, Purdue. Wisconsin played them last Sunday, losing by 8. What makes the Badgers think that they're ready this time? Head coach Greg Gard.
I think getting healthy was a big piece of it. And I mean, the stars have been in different parts of our team throughout the year. You know, Chucky had big games. Max has had big games. AJ has one today. John had one yesterday. But I've always felt the real strength of this, the ace of this team, has been their depth. That spark comes from specifically Cam and John.
In the Big East tournament, Marquette with another win, this time over Providence, 79-68. The Golden Eagles tip off tonight at Madison Square Garden against UConn. NFL, the Packers introduced their new running back, Josh Jacobs, after leaving the Raiders.
Ultimately, it came down to what I seen and what I felt like I believed in this team, the history of this organization, and feeling like I'm wanted by our organization. That's really what it came down to.
That's running back Josh Jacobs. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, partly sunny with highs in the mid-50s. It'll be breezy out of the west, up to 30 miles per hour at times. For tonight, partly cloudy, breezy, 28. More clouds for Sunday. We'll see a high near 37. Monday, partly sunny. Again, highs around 37.
It's 39 at our studios.
Hi, I'm Emily from Weichert Realtors Lake Point in Madison. Home ownership is a big deal, and so is taking the leap into the buying or selling of any property. The Weichert team gets that, and our job is to help you navigate the sales process and provide smooth sailing. You have questions? We have answers. You have worries? We have solutions. Let us open the door to your future home. Weichert Realtors Lake Point, 608-721-8002, 2045 Atwood Avenue. Find more info at weichert-lakepoint.com.
Are record energy costs putting a squeeze on your fixed or limited incomes? With inflation rising at record levels and incomes not keeping pace, you might be one of tens of thousands of Wisconsin residents who are struggling to survive in the blistering heat of summer or the bitter cold of winter. While you haven't asked for it, the Keep Wisconsin Warm Cool Fund and your local energy assistance providers are here to help. No Wisconsin resident should ever have to face the challenge of living without heat or power or face homelessness. For a hand up, apply today and call 1-800-506-5596. That's 800-506-5596. Or visit www.heat.help.
As you age, you may have questions about finding transportation, healthy meals, or other services around your home and in your community. And the Elder Care Locator has the answers at 1-800-677-1116. Our caring advisors can connect you to trustworthy local experts and the support you need to age well at home. Real people, real assistance, and real connections are just a phone call away with the Elder Care Locator. 1-800-677-1116.
Your home for the Devil's Advocates. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
AM 101.1 FM. I'm your host, Don Brown. Johnny's on the board. And here in the office of former Alderman Don Paul Brown, our resident counsel, one of them, James Centel, has arrived getting ready for his show, Morning Cannolis. It starts at 9. So always glad to have him. And my guests, of course, are school board incumbents, candidates for reelection, Kelly Piazek and Anthony Zenobia. And I'm joined by Dr. Robert Kaufman of Pepperdine University. And been a great show so far. And one of our callers earlier, Susie, was talking about all the great things going on with our students in the schools. And I wanted to give a big congrats to the Waukesha South Academic Decathlon team that went to state on Thursday and Friday up in Green Bay. Haven't heard the results yet, but very proud of what they've accomplished so far and looking forward to hearing more great things about them. And it is St. Patrick's Day weekend, and everyone knows I love the Pogues, but I had to have, that was the Pogues' broad, majestic Shannon. And We lost Shane McGowan last November 30th, but he lives forever in our hearts. And I know Bob holds him very dear. Actually, I don't know that. But another kind of a holiday for Civic Media, our parent company, our co-founder and CEO, Sage Weil, celebrating a birthday on March 17th, St. Patrick's Day. And happy birthday to him, and thanks for his vision in bringing local radio back. Really back at the most local levels, and really giving a lot of people an opportunity to focus on the things that are most important to us at the local level. So happy birthday, Sage, if you're listening. And so questions for our school board candidates. We had a question last week from a caller for last week's candidates, and so I want to include this, was parents' rights. Are they already in place, or what more needs to be done? And what kind of influence should parents have on curricular development? Who'd like to go first?
Sure, I'll be happy to kick it off.
Thanks, Kelly.
Are they already in place? Well, they are now. I think the question of, you know, what policies and procedures did we already have on the books, and how were those actually being implemented, and how did parents feel about how those were being implemented are all great discussion. But, you know, as I think what you're alluding to, the resolution that we passed last January was really based on four pieces. And that was our students being challenged is time well spent in the classroom. And that was one part of it. Our parents informed of what's going on? Are we protecting information associated with what students might be sharing? Are deeply held personal and family beliefs being respected in the school environment? And then are we collaborating with parents in terms of how students are being treated at school? And so a lot of people will say that, well, maybe that was all just happening the way everybody thought it was. But it wasn't. I have an example of a form that was handed out to middle and high school students in the fall of 2021. And the top of that form indicates, name, preferred name, pronouns, and then a checkbox of use my pronouns with my family, my peers, school admin, nobody. So here's a perfect example of where information is being collected from a student and it's going to be used in the classroom but there may be something there that the parents aren't aware of. And I think there's a lot of judgment potentially that's made by those professionals engaging with those kids that say, well, maybe the parent doesn't need to know, or maybe the parent isn't going to be responsive to this. But who gets to make that decision? And I think that's a really important one for me. You know, when I kind of dug in on things that were happening at the district level, we discovered that the gifted and talented program funding had been cut. There was a district equity leadership team that had been put in place. Teachers were being told by administrators that they had to put anti-racist classroom signs on their doors. There was I remember very vividly in 2019, there was a Facebook post that was sponsored by the district that said teachers were announcing the creation of a GSA club in a middle school. And then in the summer of 2021, we had pride flags appeared in classrooms all over our high schools. So when you talk about parental rights, are they already in place? What we're talking about is transparency and awareness and understanding of what's being taught in the classroom, what the classroom environment is actually representing. And I think as at least I came into my position on the board, and what I experienced as a parent was that there were a lot of things happening that parents weren't aware of. And in my opinion, that's not okay.
Okay. Yeah, Anthony?
I think the biggest thing that I realized when I came into the job on the board was, you know, everybody feels that parents have rights, but does the school board respect those rights and want to hear from parents? And does the administration do the same thing? And in a lot of cases, to some degree, Waukesha, but all over the country, that was not the case. School boards and administrations were not listening to parents. And when parents began to see the types of materials that were in the classrooms, that are in the libraries, it shocked them, because it is absolutely shocking and horrifying. Another big part of the parental rights resolution was the inappropriate materials that are obscene and pornographic that are in libraries as young, you know, when you're, a lot of people want to try to characterize this as, well, you're trying to ban books for high school kids and silence conversations. No, we're trying to prevent the sexualization of young children as young as kindergarten. And it's graphic and perverse, and it comes under this umbrella of a protected class, so that you can't say anything about it. You can't question it. You just have to accept it as parents that this is the way it is. And I think parents in Waukesha and all over this country that has begun to stood up, they're the people that got us elected to the school board. Grassroots effort to get kids back to learning it at all levels. The parental rights resolution was necessary for us to show parents we were serious and give good guidance to the administration.
Okay. So, Two questions I'll fire you quick. Do we have specific examples of those books that were deemed as perverse or pornographic? And then second question, it's more of a statement, was that, well, it is a question. A former constituent of mine that I admire very much, she had a call from middle school about her middle schooler, I forget, seventh or eighth grade, that he was not behaving in class.
Mm-hmm.
So she, you know, she has a background in education, so she went, got permission from the principal's office, got us, went in and sat next to her child at the school. So listen to what the teacher was teaching, making sure that the teacher was fine, but just making sure her mm-hmm. son was behaving. And I guess after she left, one of her son's friends said, "Your mom scares me." Do parents really know enough about some of the rights that are out there that they can take advantage of? Is that also part of the problem?
I think parents have started to become much more engaged. They've gotten into the actual school board policies that govern our actions and that, you know, guide the school board, guide administration. And we've had a great partnership with our administration. Our superintendent has wanted to work with us. He worked great with the old board. That board is completely turned over, and he works great with us. But yes, the materials that we're talking about, I know Kelly has a few actual examples that were removed from the libraries, but on the basic level of some of the books that were geared towards elementary school, these are books that graphically depict sex between children. Graphically depict. Okay. When you're talking about the more of the writing, the fiction that's not necessarily in pictures, because look, our kids aren't reading at that level. They have to be shown the images in order to understand the material, which is so damning for the type of stuff that's been snuck into our libraries. But I know Kelly's got a couple examples, which I don't think you could read on air.
Well, I think it's important to differentiate between, you know, kids are going to hear or they're going to read an F-bomb here and there. You know, right. The state of the world is that, you know, sure. It's inevitable, unfortunately. But okay. This idea that there've been, you know, massive books that have banned. I'm going to hand this to you, Don, while I'm talking, and just have you take a look at that first Thank sentence you. On the left page and the last sentence on the right page. We looked at hundreds of books, and there were books that were raised as concerns, and the question is always, you know, you're taking out, you're banning. Well, about 15 books that were at the middle school level were determined to be inappropriate for middle schoolers, went up to the high school level. Mm. And there were six books in 2022, and there were another three in 2023 okay. that were removed. I brought one of the books that was removed is called Jack of Hearts. It has nothing to do with education. There's no purpose in having that okay. book in our library. I'm just curious what you thought of what you read.
Yeah, no, that certainly was something. It was alarming.
Are you surprised? Yeah. I mean, because I think what a lot of people, you know, we try to convince people that this is just, you know, that in aggregate, it's a piece of literature. Yeah. But in reality, it's just a piece of pornography. There's.
I would have to dignify, you know, what you said there. And I know Professor Kaufman's looking to chime in, and we have a caller. So go ahead, Bob.
I admire Kelly and Anthony because they're evidence of a pushback. What we're talking about is as an example of us going astray. The parents pay the taxes. If you look at the history of education, the people rule, and we are not subjects, we're citizens, and we have an increasingly arrogant class of experts who abuse their expertise and exaggerate it, telling parents what to do. This is particularly egregious in the school situation where it's supposed to be a local issue. And anything that reins in the so-called experts who are often wrong. This is, again, one of the unintended blessings of COVID, that it's motivated candidates like these to be okay. proactive and restore us to an original, better vision of the proper relationship between the people and its government.
Sounds good. We have a caller on the line. Christina, what's on your mind?
Hi, I actually was calling about this parental rights resolution, and I apologize, I've got a cold right now, so my voice is a little off, but I did have questions. When the parental rights resolution was passed, I did not agree with it because I was concerned that it was basically going to swing the pendulum in too far of a direction where parents still weren't being heard. And I'm curious because I sent five or six emails to these two incumbents over the past couple of years about the parental rights resolution and what is being done to ensure that all parents are being heard. I have not received a response ever where I had said I would like to know if things are being censored in my children's curriculum and how that's being handled, because I have not heard or seen anything from these two board yeah. members.
Yeah, I'll take that one. I apologize if I haven't responded to your particular email. I have responded to an awful lot of emails from parents on this subject and others. I would just say, as far as the idea of censorship, just to kind of describe briefly the type of materials we're talking about, not only books in the library, but some of the books that are in classroom libraries, is if you would be okay with, if any parent would be okay if they wheeled a TV and a VCR into the classroom and began to show an X-rated movie. And I think the parental outrage would be high school. Yeah, that would be horrible. But as your kid gets younger, the more outraged every parent would be. And to say that that would be some type of overstretch or overreaction, it's not at all. The books that I have seen are so dark and ugly and violent in so many ways. I can't even read most of them, and nor do I want to. So it's horrific and needs to be dealt with, and we're trying.
We're going to wind up this show continuing this discussion, especially about concept of inclusion in our public schools, with Anthony Zanobi and Kelly Piasek, incoming candidates for re-election.
This is the Shaw, WAUK. The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
I ate at gas stations today. You took me to the finer gas station.
You drove, dude. What are you talking about? You're a grown-ass man. Go get yourself a piece of cherry pie, man. What do you want me to do?
Do I look like a roasted turkey to you right now? I know you're hungry. Like the cartoon style?
You do look like a...
beef? A little piece of bacon, a slab of meat, something?
Oh, yeah.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6. On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Maggie Dawn Show.
How to avoid this apocalyptic nightmare? It's to vote. Because at the end of the day, the only thing that will save our democracy is our democracy. America, make your voice heard. Turn away from authoritarianism and vote this November.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
The Shaw, WAUK, Waukesha's home for Nightlight with Peach Waba.
And that is the Waterboys with a fantastic cover of Van Morrison's Sweet Thing here on this St. Patrick's Day weekend. And both our guests, incumbent candidates, Anthony Zanobi and Kelly Piasek, and Dr. Robert Kaufman, our moderator, if you will, or contributor from Pepperdine University, have all agreed on some non-conventional approaches to including faculty, people with great backgrounds. So when I make my case for teaching Irish and Irish American history in our schools, I hope you'll keep me in mind. And Bob, maybe you could create an opening for me there at Pepperdine. I don't think my family would mind relocating to those warm climes. So just planting the seed. So so we were talking just about the parents' rights and also about the books being banned. And it leads to another conversation I want to have. You know, kind of this is the elephant in the living room, or the bigger question is critics of the school board say that the policies enacted in recent years have made certain students and faculty feel excluded. What is your reaction to these sentiments, and what do you feel should be an administration's role in promoting an inclusive school environment? And before you answer, I want to cite two examples here. I've been outspoken. I'm Catholic, raised in the Catholic tradition. And Kelly, as you may know, the Catholic Church's response to change is always take two aspirin and call me in 200 years. I learned recently there was a conference of Catholic bishops at St. Louis University earlier this month in which a group of more than a dozen U.S. bishops gathered for a private meeting at St. Louis University, a Catholic college. Actually, it was in January, I stand corrected, to listen to trans people and their families, as well as to theologians, medical professionals, and those in church industry. Second example, and again, I guess kind of the follow-up question on that too, is like if the Catholic universe, or if the Catholic Church is kind of making an effort to try to be more, attempt to be more inclusive, you know, should our public schools not also be doing the same? Second point, and this is more metrics driven, because we talk about the emphasis on STEM and on business. And here in town, we have Northwestern Mutual, which is them along with other companies have made significant investments in DEI initiatives. And I also learned recently an estimated 80% of U.S. employers have DEI initiatives underway. Recent DEI reports say that companies that promote DEI are 2.6 times more successful at retaining their workforce and 35% more productive. They are 65% more likely to meet or exceed sales goals, 70 to 80% more innovative than their competitors. And, you know, sick rates, you know, sick day rates are lower. Insurance rates have decreased. And I guess the point I'm making is, you know, the corporate world, which you would say probably leans more red, that's fair to say, more than a feel-good kumbaya thing, DEI is viewed as a smart business strategy. Do you feel public schools should adopt something from this playbook? So I know I've thrown a lot at you, but I wanted to give you a chance to respond to this. So
well, that's a lot. So I'm going to have to roll back a little bit to find the question.
So the original question was what, they said critics have said that recent policies have made certain students and faculty feel excluded. What's your reaction to these sentiments? And what do you feel is the administration's role in promoting an inclusive school environment?
Well, I think it's really important that we have an agreement on what inclusive means if you're going to start to have this conversation, right? Because for some people, inclusive means anything goes. And for other people, inclusive means really, truly inclusive, that everybody has, a right and respect for their opinion, their personal and deeply held beliefs, and that there's mutual respect and tolerance and understanding. In my opinion, good policy, good public policy, which is ultimately what we're talking about in a public school environment, is something that creates reasonable boundaries so that organizations can function well together with some rules of engagement, and that also allows for personal freedoms, right? We don't want to take anybody's rights away, right? So you have to balance that. And when you're dealing with minors, sometimes we have to remember that the rights of minors can be governed by the rights of parents. So that adds another layer of complexity. And so what we've done with implementation of a policy that's been on the books for actually 7 years, it's longer, it's older than that, but Waukesha adopted it then before our time, is actually implemented. What's the point of having a policy if you're not going to apply the policy? And I mentioned earlier, one of the challenges that we found when we started on the board were some of these questions between teachers and students that were secret. What can you tell me about yourself that you don't want me to share with your parents? Or, the flags in particular, but there were other things, signs, banners, and other things. So, for me, flags are things that unite people. People are united under flags, or flags mark territory. So if you go and put a flag up somewhere, you're either saying we're all united under this, or we're claiming this place. Sure. And I think that's divisive. I don't think that that's an inclusive strategy. And so I think that kind of ties back to what is the right balance of policy that says, people can have their freedom. And remember that we're talking about minors here. So parents have a say. Sure. And then also that there are appropriate rules in place that will govern the group.
Sounds good. I apologize. We're short on time. So Anthony, go ahead. We have 2 minutes.
Oh, okay. This conversation and a lot of the stats and some of the examples you gave of DEI, this conversation always wants to bleed into how adults are treated and how we as a society respect the rights of other adults. And I'm all for personal liberty and freedom. I can't control what any parent does, what any adult does. But as adults, we do have a say and a right to speak to our minor children about the dangers of the world and what some of these things that we are interjecting into our schools has a negative connotation. And I really come back to sexualizing children. Sure. I just do not believe that we should put identities and sexual identities on kids before they have any understanding, of them before they hit puberty.
Terrific.
So we always have to separate that conversation.
Okay. Sounds good. Bob Kaufman, I got 10 seconds for you. 15.
Don, not for the first time. I disagree with everything you said. DEI is one of the worst things that we are experiencing. And Claudine Gay of Harvard and those university presidents are the Frankensteins of DEI. Martin Luther King is right. Judge people as individuals by the content of their character. Don't weaponize race.
Professor Robert Kaufman, incumbent candidates Anthony Zenobia and Dr. Kelly Piasek, thanks so much.
Keeping Southeast Wisconsin informed, engaged, and entertained. This is The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
Monday morning on Up North News Radio, expect a wave of reminders about voting on April 2nd. Lucy Ripp from A Better Wisconsin Together is our guest.
From the kennel to the coop, whatever the season, Fleet Farm has everything to keep your animals happy and healthy. From training your pup to sit season, to mastering those retrieval skills season. From clipping your horse for competition season, to keeping the backyard birds well-fed season. And of course, loving your pets like family season. There's a reason people say, if Fleet Farm doesn't have it, you don't need it. Because we have it all. Fleet Farm. Built for real life.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour. Sponsored by Upside.
I'm Linda Kenyon.